This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idsty in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Virtuoso guitar player Pat Metheny has spent more than half his life writing and making music that many call eclectic, genre-bending, or just plain hard to define. That doesn't seem to bother the winner of 16 Grammy Awards. While the style of music may be considered unclassifiable, the Pat Metheny sound is very distinctive. Lush layers, harmonic depth, rich melodies. Metheny's new album references this past but continues to break new ground. The Way Up consists of a single long-form piece divided into four sections. It's reaction, Pat Metheny says, to a world where things are getting shorter, dumber, less interesting, less detailed, more predictable. Today, Pat Metheny joins us in Studio 3A to talk about the concept behind his new album and his more than 30-year career in music and to perform live for us. Here's your opportunity to talk with Pat Metheny about his music, his nearly three-decade-long career as a frontman for the Pat Metheny Group, or jazz in the modern world. Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Pat Metheny, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I've got to ask you first, though. Right now, the hottest thing in the music business is downloading ringtones for your cell phone. They last, you know, a few seconds or so. And here you are with a new album, The Way Up, that is an hour and 10 minutes long. What are you up to?
Well, in a certain degree, we are responding to the fact that the world seems to be, at least in musical terms, embracing smaller and smaller doses. And, you know, for the kinds of aesthetic values that, you know, at least, you know, our life as a band, my life as a musician have been dedicated to, we found in our own pursuit of that that the things that have real meaning, real lasting power, and you know, real kind of weight to them are the kinds of things that, in fact, take many, many years to develop and not necessarily an hour and 10 minutes to play. I mean, you could certainly probably come up with a incredibly profound ringtone. And, in fact, there may be composers that are going to do that as that form emerges. But our thing has been to kind of honor and reference the larger kinds of formal structures that have existed not only in jazz but also in other forms of music, and that's sort of where it's taken us this time around.
And as you say, this was a very long process. You went back and very thoughtfully came up with this new album.
Yeah, it's not something that you could just kind of go in and improvise. I mean, there's an enormous amount of work and research and, of course, the experience of the band and in fact, the lineup of the band at this particular moment in time is really the perfect group to attempt something like this. And, yeah, it's, you know, it involves, of course, lots of improvisation being the kind of music that it is. But at the same time, the band itself has always been about form and about finding ways of getting an interesting balance between the written material and the improvised material.
We're going to ask you to play a little bit of music from that album, but we just want to warn listeners. The album, I think in performance you have at least six players. Today you've got your bass man, Steve Rodby, here. Welcome, Steve. Nice to have you here.
Great to be here.
And so you're going to perform a little bit for us, just the two of you, a little excerpt from the album?
Yeah, I mean, you know, after all of our, you know, intense scrutiny of the form and everything that we've just talked about, which is clearly there on the record, what you're going to hear now is basically us taking one of the themes from the records and sort of playing a blues around it, which is kind of the opposite extreme of all the stuff we're talking about. But nevertheless, with just guitar and bass, it's a good way to approach it. So you'll get to hear a little bit of one of the melodies that's from the record, and then we're just going to play on it a little bit.
Great.
One, two, three, four. Thank you.
Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Talk of the Nation. That's guitarist Pat Metheny and bass player Steve Rodby playing an excerpt from the Pat Metheny Group's new CD, The Way Up. Pat, you said that you were just going to take a blues turn on it. Now, I'm an amateur guitarist who struggles to play even a little bit of the blues, and that sounded like a lot more than the blues to me. But I guess it was really the basic form was blues, right?
Yeah, and at so much of the root of what I think all jazz musicians do remains a very strong reference point to that particular form, which of course is 12-bar blues that has followed and led kind of the formal structure ways for generations and generations of musicians, all of whom are not only asked but obligated to find their own particular way to address it. And that's been key for me right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And it's a real challenge to be an individual in that structure because it's an easy form to fall back on crutches and what someone else has done and hear something and simply copy that.
Well, for me, the whole narrative aspect of what it is to be an improvising musician, to be an improviser, is in fact the fun of it and also the duty of it, to tell a story, to bring people along into the world of the things that you've noticed, that you found to be true, that you found exciting in the sounds and the harmonies and all of the different colors and aspects of what music offers all of us.
Let's get our listeners involved right away before we go to our break. Chris is in St. Louis. I think that's a town you know well. Chris, you have a question or a comment.
Hi, Steve. I was a guitar student back at Berkeley in the early 80s, and we used to take the pilgrimage up to Ryle's and hear Pat in various small group scenarios. And then I've seen a couple of shows on this tour. I was in St. Louis and then the Orlando show, which I thought was particularly something special. And I just kind of wondered, over that span of time, how have you changed as a player and what caused you to make those changes over the years? Because there's definitely a continuity, obviously, in your style and your approach, but I always find it encouraging that you've continued to improve over that amount of time. And then just a side note, it was a blast to see your brother here in St. Louis play with you. And he was one of my teachers back at school.
Oh, that's
great. A wonderful guy.
That's great. He is a wonderful guy and my most important teacher, too. Well, I mean, if I look back over the years, I mean, the main thing, and I appreciate you, you know, all the stuff you said, but you know, the main thing is that I do feel like I can play a lot better now than I used to. When I first started making records, I had really only been playing the guitar for a few years, really. And at this point, having done it for, you know, way more than half of my life, I have a lot more kind of experience and more reference points to, you know, kind of in for my own satisfaction, be able to speak more fluently about the kinds of things that I really care about as a player that really just comes with time. And, you know, the fun part for me has been, in fact, the work of trying to get better as a musician. I mean, I really feel so lucky and privileged to have the kind of platform and the opportunities to play with so many of the greatest musicians in the world. And, you know, those are the guys that I've really learned from.
We want to hear you talk a little bit more about that, but first we're going to take a short break, and as we go into it, let's listen to a selection from Pat Metheny Group's new CD, The Way Up. This is with full orchestration. More from Pat Metheny after the break. I'm John Idstey. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington. With us here in Studio 3A is jazz guitarist Pat Metheny. The new CD from the Pat Metheny Group is called The Way Up. If you have a question for Pat about the role of the guitar in jazz, the concepts behind this new album, or how the music of the Pat Metheny Group has changed over the years, give us a call. The number is 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. Pat, how would you describe this new album? I mean, is it jazz? Is it classical? Is it jazz pop? Is it what is it?
Well, you know, having been around for a while now, I've watched these various terms come and go. Kind of, they have a lifespan of a few years each, you know, that people, you know, work them. And, I mean, you know, for me, if I have to use one word, I'm going to use jazz. And I understand the controversy of me saying that. My particular view is that if you're a jazz musician in the modern world and somebody somewhere is saying what you're doing isn't jazz, you're not doing your job. Our obligation, in my opinion, is to continue the research and to really honor the tradition in jazz that has involved generations of musicians asking hard questions about what the form can be and trying to reconcile the realities of their time with that tradition, not only in terms of the notes, the harmonies, the material sounds of the music itself, but also with the possibilities that each time offers. I mean, in early jazz, I mean, the whole idea of brass bands, of drum sets, of using string bass in a pizzicato way, all of those things also honor and represent the technology of that time. And for me, the whole idea of involving ourselves in the kinds of, again, research that we've done using electronics, using all the different sounds that we've done, are in fact valid, fair game for us as jazz musicians to explore the possibilities and try to try to make sense of all of that in the context of this time, but with the whole idea of, you know, trying to play good and trying to do the kinds of things that have been presented by the masters over the years.
I think, you know, you could get people who might say, this is a, sort of a very, very classical-like album. It's a big, long piece, an hour and 10 minutes. It's divided in four parts. But you've sort of been against sort of the notion of making jazz a classical form. You really don't like that.
Well, I mean, what I feel is that it's not so much the classical form as much as I don't want to see jazz finally get broken down into these boxes of, okay, this is jazz. This, and this must be present. If it's not present, then it's no longer jazz. Much the same way Baroque music is now. It's like a defined thing. Okay, Baroque music, we know what it is. That's that. I really resist that. I want to keep jazz as living, breathing folk music, street music, invented by each new generation their own way, with their own approach, their own angles. I like the idea of imagining a kind of jazz that sounds nothing like any jazz we've ever heard, as opposed to like, oh no, we got to keep it just like that. I mean, you know, I have no problem with that either. I mean, anybody who plays good, I'm always going to dig it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I do feel like there's a part of the jazz wing in each generation that's going to say, yeah, but. And that's the part of the experience that for me is, I don't want to say most exciting, because it can be very exciting to hear somebody play in an older style, you know, if they sound fantastic doing it. But there's something about people actually having to come face to face with the unknown and even failing that to me is part of the excitement of what the form offers us. And that's something I really value.
Let's go to an email. Don in Buffalo, New York, wonders who you're being influenced by right now musically. Who's on your iPod or in your CD player?
You know, I tend to find myself listening to a lot of the music that I've listened to a lot over the years and constantly renewing my excitement about it and learning from it. I mean, of course, I listen to lots of John Coltrane, lots of Charlie Parker, lots of Lester Young. I'm a huge trumpet fan. My whole family is trumpet players. Somebody talked about my brother Mike, who played mm-hmm. with us, and I kind of grew up around trumpet players. And I listen to trumpet players all the time: Clifford Brown, Freddie Hubbard, Miles Davis, Woody Shaw. You know, there's some really exciting new trumpet players that I enjoy listening, like Nicholas Payton, Alex Sipiagin, Roy Hargrove. Those are great trumpet players that are around now. Kenny Wheeler. But, you know, I kind of have two real favorite musicians who are Herbie Hancock, who's like my super hero in a lot of ways, in many, many ways, and also Keith Jarrett is an incredible mm-hmm. force in the music world.
There was an article in the New York Times recently about you, and it talked about influences and listed some of them. In fact, you brought, I think, to that session CDs with a number of songs on them. One of them, let's talk a little bit about those.
Sure.
You mentioned a Sonny Rollins and Coleman Hawkins recording that actually has a piano solo on it. You referenced Keith Jarrett a moment ago. That sort of, you think, led the way to what Keith Jarrett does.
Actually, while we were doing that interview, I was trying very hard not to say that, because I don't know for a fact that Keith has ever even heard this record. I do know that he likes Paul Blais, who's the piano player in question here, because I've heard that from some mutual friends. But Paul Blais is the piano player on this session, and to me, his solo really did kind of open up a whole new universe of harmonic possibilities, and is really, in my opinion, one of the greatest solos in jazz.
I think we have that queued up right now.
Great.
Should we take a listen?
Love to.
All right. So tell us what you heard in that that really had an impact on you.
Well, the first thing when I hear that, it just makes me happy to hear something that happening. I mean, it's just on every level. I mean, first of all, just the feel of it and the kind of pushing and pulling that Paul brings to not only the harmonic finesse of it all, but the way he's playing with the bass and the drums, the kind of just free association he has harmonically to play on the song, which is All the Things You Are. That's the tune that they're playing there. A very often played tune, and this is just a completely, like, inside out, 360 degree backwards view of what you could possibly do with this song harmonically. And the raw creativity of it for me was incredibly powerful.
You know, I think when non-musicians listen to something like that, they can enjoy it and understand it, but think, that doesn't sound like he's within any structure. It sounds like he's picking out any key on the piano and hitting it, sort of. I mean, what happens is wonderful, and you feel wonderful, but you don't hear the structure the way a musician does. And so it's almost like you're talking a language that we're not, those of us who aren't learned in it, really don't understand.
I mean, my own particular introduction to jazz is maybe applicable to this. My brother, Mike, who we've talked to about several times today, brought home a Miles Davis record, Four and More, when I was about 11 years old. And I put that record on, and I hear this thing all the time about jazz being something that's hard to get into. But for me as an 11-year-old, I mean, putting that record on within 30 seconds, you know, my life was different, and it's been different ever since. And yet at the same time, that's a record that I go back to constantly. And with the experience I have as a musician, as a human being, as everything else, I hear it completely different every time I hear it now, including the fact that I hear all the forms. I mean, from the time I was 11 till I was maybe 13 or 14, I didn't even understand the idea of form. Like, oh, yeah, they're playing a cycle that they're repeating on and improvising over it. I just like the sound. And to me, the best music functions on many different levels for many different people. I mean, you know, we find that ourselves in our music. I mean, different people come up each night that have spent years studying the details of some compositional thing that Lyle and I have worked in there. And then the next person says, you know, I just like your music because when I put it on, it changes the color of the wallpaper in my room or something, you know. I mean, you know, everybody's got a completely different take on it. And that's one of the things that I like about instrumental music especially, is that it allows people to find their own way into the music.
Mm-hmm. You're going to play another song for us, I think.
I am. I'm going to try.
Could you do that right now?
Sure. It's kind of hard to talk about all this hip stuff and then say, okay, now I got to play something. But this is a tune. I did a record a couple years ago now that's all on this baritone guitar, tuned in a very weird way. And this is one called Song for the Boys. Thank you.
That was wonderful. Pat Metheny performing Song for the Boys. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to another email now. This is from Al. I'm not sure where Al is from. Al in San Francisco. I had the opportunity to see Pat at USC when he was artist in residence, teaching some of the students there in his art of improv. Where do you, Pat, see the genre going? Do you see much interest on the part of students towards improv and jazz in general? I'm curious, in light of today's focus and popularity of other types of music. He says, is jazz improv ascending or descending for the future?
Well, certainly it's ascending. I mean, the whole jazz education movement in America has been just kind of incredibly booming in the last 30 years. There's an organization, the IAJE, International Association of Jazz Educators, that's kind of led the way in the charge of getting thousands of more students aware and interested in jazz. And the result is just a kind of explosion of exciting, talented, fluent, capable improvising musicians like we've never really seen before. And it's thrilling to see that in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still something that, you know, can continue to go and go and go. I mean, there's always, you know, room for more and more people to become interested in it. And, you know, just me personally, I would love to see schools everywhere embrace not only jazz but music education in a much more kind of essential way to the program. I mean, there's so much evidence about how teaching kids music just expands every aspect of their cognitive skill. And, you know, just for myself, I mean, I started practicing like 20 hours a day or whatever it was when I was 11 or 12 years old, and basically kind of didn't really apply myself in school in terms of, you know, the basic kinds of things because I was so involved in music. But yet somehow the skills that I had to learn to just become a competent musician helped me in so many other ways in my life, just understanding math, understanding language, understanding the whole idea of, you know, kind of the sort of, you know, technology of what sound is and the way that applies mm-hmm. to everything else in life. So, mm-hmm. You know, music is just an incredible thing for kids to be exposed to.
We're going to take some more calls after the break, but let's listen to another selection from the Pat Metheny Group's new CD, The Way Up, as we go into that break. We'll talk more with jazz guitarist Pat Metheny after the break. I'm John Idstey. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This hour, our guest is guitarist Pat Metheny. If you have a question for him about his 27-year music career, his collaboration with other musicians, or the role of improvisation in his music, give us a call. The number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. The email address is totn@npr.org. Also, you can see photos of Pat Metheny in our studio on our website, npr.org. And we're going to go right to callers, Pat. Let's see. We've got Philip in Traverse City, Michigan. Hello, Philip. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you?
Good, good. You have a question or a comment?
Actually, I had something that I'd like to hear Pat elaborate on. He did an article in a Guitar One magazine about pentatonics. And in that article, he stated that pentatonics sound natural to the human ear. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Yes. Okay.
Sure.
Pentatonics.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, it's kind of a technical question for a general audience. So just to kind of break that down quickly for anybody who's listening to this that has no idea what we're talking about, pentatonic is a five-note scale that is kind of found throughout music in human history. It seems like somehow we all kind of gravitate towards this, you know, group of notes. You find it, you know, all over Africa, China, you know, in most pop music, certainly most hip-hop, most rap. It's kind of like at the core there's this group of a few notes that we all kind of go to. And, you know, jazz guys in general, particularly John Coltrane, kind of took that idea to a really, like, kind of abstract place in a way that still retains this kind of weight and power that the pentatonic kind of sound invokes. And probably Train's most famous example of that sound is a record he made called Love Supreme. Mm-hmm. So I would refer anybody that's listening to this that's curious about pentatonics at all to check out John Coltrane and maybe even go right to Love Supreme. That would be a great place to go.
But it's part of human makeup. We resonate to certain things. And for some reason, our brains are built so that we resonate and to this pentatonic scale. Speaks to us somehow.
I'm not an expert on the field at all, but I mean, from what I understand, there are aspects of what the overtone series is. I mean, where the harmonics fall in on a musical string that have applications throughout all of natural existence. I mean, from the very smallest particles on up, there is a certain sense of harmony to things that, again, is, you know, an example of how studying music and learning about music kind of helps you literally find resonance in all of these other subjects.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another email this time from Alex in San Antonio. For the past couple of years, my 15-year-old son has been learning to play the guitar. He enjoys rock, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, hard rock, as well as some blues, B.B. King, Stevie Ray Vaughan. He loves listening to and trying to emulate new genres. Can you suggest a little jazz guitar that might serve as an introduction?
Sure. I mean, for me, there are many, many, many great jazz guitar players. But, you know, the guy for me was Wes Montgomery, who was an important musician, not just guitarist, important improvising musician throughout the 60s, mm-hmm. Particularly. He started in the late 50s. But to me, if you just pick up any Wes Montgomery record, you can't go wrong. He's somebody that never really made a bad recording. I mean, they're all excellent, and there's quite a variety among them. But that's who I would always recommend as the first place to go. You know, going back in history a little bit, there's Django Reinhardt, who's a musician that a lot of people are familiar with, who also was, I think, one of the important improvising guitar mm-hmm. players. But Wes is the guy for me.
And where is the guitar headed, do you think? You're at the forefront of it, I know. Where do you think the guitar is going in terms of jazz?
Well, I think that, you know, the last 25, 30 years have, you know, found the guitar at a much more sort of integrated spot in the jazz panorama. And there's a couple of us, and we're often grouped together. John Scofield and Bill Frisell, we're all roughly the same age. And I think all three of us in our different ways have been working hard to try to you know, continue the research of what the instrument can offer to our fellow players in jazz. And I think that some of the oddities of the guitar actually have been kind of refreshing components in what has happened in jazz over the last 30 years or so. And you know, kind of the way that we look at things often, you know, is from a different angle than saxophone players, trumpet players, all of whom have these incredible iconic figures in their history that really you cannot avoid. I mean, you know, there's, like I've mentioned several times, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Clifford Brown. I mean, you have to deal with that. And guitar players, I mean, we have a couple guys. I mean, I mentioned Wes Montgomery, but each guitar player is so idiosyncratic with such weird ways of doing things that are unique to them that there's never been that kind of defining thing, like that's the way it's got to be. So each guy that comes along is kind of, I think, especially equipped to address that mandate that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, which jazz demands, which is that you bring who you are to the table. And with guitar, that means also this very odd way that you have of playing your instrument, because no two people do it the same. Mm-hmm. And I like that aspect of the guitar.
What's your relationship to the guitar? Do you think of yourself as an artist? You just happen to have a guitar in your hand? Or are you you know, glued to the guitar, that's the only way to express yourself?
The guitar is really just a translation device for me. I don't really think about the guitar too much, other than the fact that the more equipped I am to be able to sort of render into sound the things that I hear in my head, the better. But I don't play the guitar particularly well, honestly. I mean, in terms of, you know, playing blazing fast, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, you know, it's functional, but it's really just a translation device to get ideas out.
And I think you're getting a lot of disagreement on that.
Well, I'm working hard all the time on trying to improve, but for me, it's just, you know, if I sit down at the piano, which I play less, you know, mm-hmm. well than the guitar, I play the same ideas. Mm-hmm. The same melodies come out, the same thing. Or even the trumpet, which I played as a kid. I mean, that really sounds bad. But the idea comes first, and then the mechanism for making it sound out into the air is just kind of a physical problem.
Mm-hmm. Can we ask you to play for us again?
Sure. I'm going to play sort of a rubato version of a tune that my group has played for many, many years called Last Train Home. Thank you.
That was just wonderful. Pat Metheny playing Last Train Home here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're back with Pat Metheny, and we're going to get some listeners to ask you some questions. I'm sure people out there want to talk to you. So let's go right now to Dave in Jacksonville, Florida. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to be on the show, especially with as great a guitarist as Pat Metheny. And I strenuously object to the suggestion that you're not a good guitarist.
No. Didn't you hear that big clam that I just played?
I remember the first time I saw you was in the Berklee Performance Center when you played warm-up for Jean-Luc Ponty. And that was back in the late 70s. And that was just an amazing show then, and you've just gotten better with every passing year.
Thank you.
I have one thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, probably one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've ever heard in my life was April Wind from your self-titled album.
Mm-hmm.
That was just amazing work, and it just
Thank
leaves
you.
Me awestruck.
I appreciate that.
The question that I have, though, is that on another show I'd heard John McLaughlin mention that he thought that guitars love to play with other guitars, and I know that he did the album with Paco de Lucia and Al Di Meola. Have you had any aspirations to have that kind of collaboration with other guitarists?
Well, yeah, and I'm very honored that I, you know, if I had kept going with my jazz guitar list recommendation, the next guy after Wes Montgomery I would have said would be Jim Hall, who in fact is a kind of mentor and certainly important figure for all of us that have followed his lead in what jazz guitar can be. And I'm very honored that I got the chance to do a duet record with Jim a couple years ago that is out under both of our names. So I think it's on Concord Records, or no, oh, they're going to kill me, Telarc Records. You know, Jim is just an incredible hero for me, so I enjoyed that. And I mentioned Bill Frisell and John Scofield, both of whom I've done collaborative projects with, and also Mick Goodrick, who's a fantastic guitar player that I was associated with early on with Gary Burton. So in many ways, those guys kind of are my real guitar heroes among my contemporaries, and I'm happy that not only have I gotten to play with them, but I'm very happy to be able to be considered part of the community with those guys.
Anyone you'd like to hear Pat play with?
I was thinking one thing that would be interesting would be someone like Larry Coryell.
I love Larry. To me, Larry was one of the important, really vanguard musicians of the late 60s, particularly, again, his work with Gary Burton, which just kind of cracked open the whole universe. And there's one record Larry made called Gary Burton Quartet in Concert. It's hard to find. But if I have to list my top five jazz guitar records, that's right in there. To me, he just kind of changed, you know, a whole way of thinking about what the guitar could be on that record.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you so much.
Pat, you mentioned Jim Hall, and I recall you saying something about the way Jim plays, and that is that he's got this, found the dynamic range of the guitar, and that's a difficult thing on this instrument.
It is, and in fact, it's one of the things that has kind of made guitar a challenging instrument in jazz. I mean, if you just imagine in your mind a saxophone and you're sitting in a room and a saxophone player plays his softest note and then the loudest note that he can play, or if you think of a drummer who the softest he could touch a drum with a brush to as hard as he could hit his crash cymbals, and you think about what that ratio from loud to soft is, and then you think about a guitar player in a room and not using an amp, just the acoustic properties of the instrument, it has a very small dynamic range. And what one of the things that Jim did was kind of find a touch on the instrument that was kind of softer in its medium volume that allowed him to kind of create the illusion of this much wider dynamic range, which I think is a key thing to what the guitar can be as a jazz instrument.
Mm-hmm. You've had other collaborations as well. One that I love a lot is Beyond the Missouri Sky with Charlie Hayden. Playing with all these other musicians introduces you or keeps you moving forward? Or why is it that musicians just feel like they need to, you know, get outside their own group? And
well, for me, it's like, you know, I have done a lot of different things with a lot of different people, but at the same time, with every single person I've ever done anything with, and I actually don't do collaborative things lightly. I mean, it's something that always that's quite a consideration for me, but there is a certain kind of almost tribal element in it to me. Mm-hmm. When I hear musicians kind of, it doesn't matter what style of music they're playing, but I recognize something about the way they play, they sound. Like I've worked a lot with a couple of well-known Brazilian people like Milton Nascimento or Antonio Carlos Jobim. You know, those kinds of guys, you know, I hear their sound and I understand something about it.
Well, we look forward to what you come up with next. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Pat Metheny joined us here in Studio 3A. The Pat Metheny Group plays tonight at the Lisner Auditorium here in Washington. You can see photos of Pat Metheny in our studio and hear the performance and song cuts later this evening at our website, npr.org. In Washington, John Idstey, NPR News.